Good afternoon. Joining us on the line now is Usman Umar, who was born in Ghana, and at the age of just 12 years old, he left his village and began what would be a five-year journey to Europe, travelling across the Sahara Desert by foot, crossing the Mediterranean Sea in a small boat, and witnessing unfathomable horrors, including the deaths of many of his companions. His book, North to Paradise, is his inspiring true story. Welcome to the show, Usman.
Well, thank you very much for this huge opportunity to share the life story of not only my personal story, but rather all my companions who lost their life during this journey and unfortunately can't be here today to explain their story. So thank you very much for giving voice to all my companions who lost their life.
Oh, it's my pleasure. We thank you very much for joining us to share your story. So if you can tell us a little bit, first of all, what your childhood was like in Ghana, what was village life like for you there?
The fact is that as a Ghanaian, we are quite lucky enough that Ghana is one of the most democratic countries in West Africa. Ghana is the only country that had never had civil war. It's really unfortunate that apart from this lucky we are, we still struggle every day, losing our lives to cross the desert, Libya, and finally the Mediterranean Sea, seeking for a best opportunities in Europe. My life was very simple and easier in my village, whereby my father was a shaman, and by so I was considered was luckiest person among my friends in the village. I never went to bed without eating, but curiosity definitely pushed me out of my village at the age of 9 to go to this nearby city to learn mechanic. And finally, at the age of 12, 13 years, I moved out of the country seeking for opportunities and ways to get to Europe, known as paradise that time.
Yeah. And what about education? What was education like available as a child?
The fact is that there was no school in my village, so we had to walk 4 miles every day to go to school and 4 miles back, which is more or less 14 kilometers a day to go to school. And of course, education wasn't free in Ghana. So in 2 years, I had to drop out of school because my parents couldn't afford an economic support to go to school.
Wow. And what was happening and going on in your life to make you think at the age of 12 that you wanted to get out of the country?
I always want to underline the fact that the realities among the African countries are huge and widely in the sense that not all Africans, for example, my case, no war pursued me. I left Ghana due to curiosity because I still remember during my childhood, we couldn't have access to, let's say, a big supermarkets where to buy toy cars and all those kind of things. So we had to manufacture. I had to be quite creative enough to be able to manufacture our own toy cars to play. I was quite good in manufacturing this kind of toy cars, but it was quite strange to me to see an airplane flying over the sky of my village. I mean, why my toy car could not even move by itself for just a few meters. So the curiosity to understand who are those white men and why are they so capable to manufacture all those things, for example, this airplane flying over the sky of my village, pushed me to ask and to seek for mechanism to get to the white man's country to understand how and why we need to keep up to do all that.
Well, so you had lots of questions, didn't you? You were very intuitive, wanting to know how and why things were happening, how the plane was kept up in the sky, as you said, and a lot of the villagers, the elders in the village, didn't know. So you figured you needed to seek the answers to your questions elsewhere.
I still remember even the first time I saw that on in the square while we were playing, I had to take a stone on the floor, threw it up to see whether the stone was going to sustain by itself on the sky, just like the elephant, or not. And unfortunately, it falls over my head. Luckier enough that the stone wasn't so huge, so it didn't harm me much. We wouldn't be here talking about this today.
No.
But that's that's some of the...
So tell me then, when you decided to leave at the age of 12, how many of you were going, and what was your plan, and how did you know where you were going?
The truth is that I wasn't going to Europe. I was going to paradise. But the fact is that I didn't have means, I didn't have the means to go to Europe or paradise by plane or by any other means. So I was told that going to Libya, for example, could help me to get a work opportunity to be able to raise money, and therefore be able to find my way from Libya to Europe, which was called paradise that time by most of the migrants. So I wasn't going to Europe, but rather my means was to find my way to Libya and to be able to work and raise money. Because in Ghana, at the age of 9, when I started working in the mechanic shop, I never received salary for my work. I only received a plate of rice, and that's all.
Wow. And that's at the age of 9 you were working.
Exactly. At the age of 9, I started working in a city, in a mechanic shop, and without, even though one of the saddest parts of the story was that I had to escape from the different shops because they didn't give us enough food.
Mm. So when you left then to go to Libya, were you on your own or were you with a group of people?
Exactly. I was with a group of people, especially my friend Musa. And the truth is that we left Ghana, 3-4 of us. When we get to Agadez, Niger, we joined a group of 46 different people. And unfortunately, the mafia, human traffickers, end up abandoning us in the Sahara Desert. And the truth is that was the most saddest part of the story, because out of 46 people abandoned in the middle of the desert, 3 weeks later, only 6 of us made it to Libya. Without talking about the dead bodies we were found on the way.
My goodness. And what kind of age were you all? Were there some adults with you as well, or were you all children?
Mainly, I was the most youngest among the group. Most of them, all of them was older than me. Yes.
Okay. Gosh. So some of your friends were killed then?
Yes, most of them died on the way. Out of 46, only 6 of us made it after 3 good weeks to Libya. And that was only the first part, because once you get to Libya, just imagine those days, Muammar al-Gaddafi was the president or the dictator.
Mm.
Being black and alive was almost a crime. Imagine having to live there for 4 horrible years.
So what?
I don't speak Arabic that time. I didn't have any family member there. I don't have any money in my pocket. I had to eat, sleep, and work.
Mm.
You can imagine the situation.
And so were you able to get work then? Because that was your plan, to get to Libya and work and earn money to get to Europe. Is that what happened?
After 4 years, I was able to work in different aspects, different areas. And finally, I was capable to raise $1,800. So after 4 years working, I went to Tripoli, the capital city of Libya, and once again, I felt in the hands of human traffickers again. We were told from Tripoli to Europe, or let's say paradise, it would take us only 45 minutes. Unfortunately, there's no way that could be true. But at that time, I was almost illiterate, so I didn't have access to education. I couldn't even interpret a map. So I ended up believing that what they were slowly telling me was true. So once I gave all that money to them again, I was in a trap for the second time. So you have to leave Libya, cross all the way to Tunisia, from Tunisia to Algeria, from Algeria we cross to Morocco, from Morocco we have to go down to Mauritania, and from Mauritania then we went to Western Sahara, where finally we took the small boat to cross the Mediterranean Sea, where almost most of my friends died finally in the sea. Out of about 300 and something, most of them died.
Gosh, how awful. It's just hearing your story, it's just things that most people can't even imagine, situations like that where you have no control over what's going on, and not being able to communicate in Arabic, where you were at the time needing to speak Arabic, and not having any money, and just completely being in the hands of people who obviously didn't have your best interests at heart. It must have been incredibly scary.
And the truth is that the story is quite, I always say that this story doesn't belong to me. It belongs to thousands and thousands of most other people. It's unfortunate they are not here today because they died on the way and they can't tell their story. But the reality is that we have to, it took me to almost 21,333 kilometers from Finias, my village, to Barcelona, Spain, where I'm currently based. And the most important thing is that this number of kilometers is just not just a simple number, but the horrible experiences and difficulties and thousands and hundreds of lives that will get lost in this path is the most saddest part of the reality. And unfortunately, it still keep on happening day in and day out.
Mm. So tell us, if you can, about this boat trip then, and why it's so horrific.
The truth is that once you get to Mauritania, Western Sahara, even though we had paid more than $1,800 to these human traffickers, the boats we used was manufactured by ourselves. They just give us wood and paint to manufacture the boats ourselves, which is mainly a coffin. So I always say we didn't manufacture boats, but rather coffin of our own dead bodies. The truth of the situation is this, that even we didn't even know where we was going to. We didn't have any kind of GPS or anything like that, and not enough petrol in the boats. One of the main reasons why almost 90% of boats that start this journey from to cross Mediterranean Sea, most of them end up in the bottom of the sea. And one of the main reasons, I always think that we definitely need to change the way we pretend to solve the migration situation. I believe that when the migrants will get to the sea, the solution, the battle is lost. If we definitely want to solve this issue, we have to go to the source root of the problem, back to Africa.
Mm. Yes. And do you think that there is a lot more that can be done with regards to refugee issues and migrants trying to escape countries and find a better life? Obviously, we're seeing it right now in the news with the terrible things happening in Ukraine and countries taking in Ukrainian refugees, and some countries taking in more than others, and it's a very, very difficult situation. What do you think is the solution then?
Yes, I think the migration solution, at least the part of the world I come from, I know very well that the solution is giving access to education.
Mm.
Just as I said in my organization, my non-government organization I created 10 years ago to solve this migration problem at source with the part of the country where I come from. I think what needs to be done is to give access to education, especially digital education. Africa is the most unconnected in an increasingly connected world. And I think it's fundamental to take advantage of this huge fourth industrial revolution, which is the digital world. Of course, the reasons of why migrants and refugees are running out of their countries are many, many, many reasons. But for example, in case of Ukraine, we all know very well that today, if each and every one of us just take our private cars, drove to the border town of Polonia and trying to at least rescue one or two people, that's a good solution. But that will never end the crisis. Mm. If you definitely want to solve it, we need to press Putin to stop throwing bombs in Ukraine. It's very simple and easy and direct like that. The migration situation is something similar. We've been risking our life for the last 20, 10, 40 years. I still remember the first article I read from a diary, a Spanish diary called El País. The first dead body from sub-Saharan Africa arrived at the coast of Spain 32 years ago. Last week, 44 dead bodies was found close to Libya. Still, after 30 years, still dead bodies comes, even not one, but more. Yeah. This means that we've put a hundreds of steps backwards. And that's why my organization, NASCO Feeding Minds, his vision is to give access to education so the youth of Africa, especially Ghana, they have the right to lead the change themselves. Mm. A real paradise exists. It's in Africa, but not in Europe.
Interesting. Yes, it's, I mean, we obviously being on the radio, we're reading the news all the time, and you're right, it's so many news stories on a very, very regular basis is about migrants coming over from Africa on boats and so many of them not making it. It's absolutely heartbreaking that, as you say, it's still happening all the time. So your organization that you founded, NASCO Feeding Minds, just tell us a little bit more about what you do.
It's very simple. As a name, it's our slogan, it's feeding minds. And mainly what we do is, let's stop feeding stomachs and let's feed people's minds. If definitely we really want Africa, AIDS after the Second World War, that was 1935, have put billions and billions of dollars and euros in humanitarian aid. But unfortunately, last year, Al Jazeera published a documentary where you see that after 76 years, Africa is today more poor than 50 years ago. After, what have we done with these billions and billions of dollars invested in aid? Something is not in a good, in the right way. So we really need to change the paradigm of humanitarian aid. Let's focus on feeding people's mind, not their stomach. Charity is an insult. Depends on how you see. When it comes to cases like Ukraine, urgency cases, and things like that, of course, charity is needed. But we can keep on doing urgencies and charity for the rest of our lives. We definitely need to make real change, effective changes, like giving access to education so these young Africans will then lead the needs in their own communities, their countries, just like I've done with the NASCO Feeding Minds for the last 10 years. Our first success story, for example, is my own younger brother, who was in a position to sell the animals he had at that time to follow my footsteps, crossing the Sahara Desert, Libya, and also the Mediterranean Sea. I convinced him to stay back home because education is the best way to get a better future in his country. I helped him to study. Today, the youngest parliamentary candidate in Ghana was him last year. And other different success stories, I don't have enough time to share it here. You can always visit our website to understand. Definitely, we are not talking about ideas, but realities.
Yes. Oh, that's amazing. Fantastic to hear these success stories. So what's your website if people want more information?
It's basically www.nascoict.org. You can always visit us also in social media, and you can get to know more about the different initiatives and projects we are calling out to stop charity, but rather create prosperity for the future of the young people in Africa, especially Ghana.
Yes, that's fantastic. Well done, Usman. You're doing some amazing work. Have you ever been back to Ghana?
I just came last week. I went to inaugurate two new schools. So we currently have about 43 different schools using our 14 ICT labs, more than 3,000 children have already passed through our lab without any institutional support. So definitely I go to Ghana quite often. And if anyone listening to us also want to know more, want to come to Ghana or take part in your project, you'll be more than welcome.
Oh, fabulous. So the fact that you're going there, you're seeing the work that you're doing, you're able to see it take shape. It must be fabulous to see.
Exactly, because I think when I started for only one school, it was easy to manage. But now 40 different schools is quite important to be able to go often, to be able to make a follow-up and see how the projects are progressing.
Yes. Oh, wonderful. Well, it's been a huge pleasure to chat with you, Usman Umar, and hear just some of your incredible story. If people want to read more, they must get a copy of the book. It's called North to Paradise. It's available on our website, tre.radio. And the website for more information is NASCO, that's NASCOICT.org. That's the website. Usman, thank you so much for joining us and keep up the fantastic work that you're doing.
You're most welcome. Thank you very much for this huge opportunity.